Nice to see you very early on Saturday morning. Thank you for coming out. I am Darcy Richardson from PATH, and I have the distinct pleasure and honor to introduce this session entitled What Helps, What Hurts, Client and Frontline Provider Perspectives on TB-HIV Service Integration. And I think it's especially fitting and important that we hear on the first morning of the official conference from the people who are most directly affected in their lives and in their work by the TB-HIV dual epidemic, who are also most directly affected by the policies and the technology decisions that we make at global levels, at national levels, and at local levels. And I hope that as we go through this conference, we will be able to remember their needs, their perspectives, and what they have told you this morning in thinking about how we can move the agenda forward for really addressing the dual epidemic. I am very happy this morning to be sitting here with Lucy Cesiri, my co-chair. She will be introducing our speakers, and we have a very full slate of speakers from a very diverse set of countries and backgrounds. So without further ado, we will go to our speakers, and we will try to hold questions until the end, because I know they have a lot to say, and I think that we will gain from having all of their perspectives and then having a real conversation with the audience about some of your experiences and how we can address some of the challenges that they face in their everyday lives and work. Thank you.
Thanks, Diachi. Okay, our first speaker is going to be Kefas Ojuang, who's actually from Kenya, and I'm proud to introduce him. Kefas is the Acting National Coordinator of the National Empowerment Network of People Living with HIV and AIDS in Kenya. He is a program manager and an activist with more than 5 years of experience working in the TB and HIV response in Kenya. I take this opportunity to welcome Kefas.
Chair, ladies and gentlemen, this morning I stand here to quickly point out what hurts and what helps in client frontline provider perspectives on TB and HIV service integration. My presentation will look at what hurts at systemic level and what hurts at the middle level and at the patient level. I also look at what helps at systemic level and what helps at community level. I'm not just about to go through an agreement, but recognizing that HIV is the greatest risk factor for TB patients, and that TB-HIV co-infection rates stand at 53% in Kenya today, and recognizing also that HIV-positive persons have a 50% chance of developing TB in a lifetime, also recognizing that TB is preventable, treatable, and curable, and that HIV is preventable and manageable, up to 70% of TB patients in sub-Saharan Africa are HIV positive, and HIV increases the risk of recurrent TB. Aware that TB is the most common opportunistic infection amongst people living with HIV and AIDS, and this is the constituency that I represent. Aware also that TB is the leading cause of HIV-related morbidity. Also aware that TB is a leading cause of mortality among people living with HIV and AIDS, a third of all AIDS-related deaths are due to TB. TB accelerates immunosuppression in people living with HIV and AIDS, and that is why TB is our concern number one as people living with HIV and AIDS in Kenya and in Africa. How has SESM helped. This is a concept that was introduced just a few years back. But using the well-beaten path of HIV activism through support groups in the TB response is one of the ways that has helped. Through SESM, we have been able to lay bare the burden of TB on people living with HIV and the burden of HIV on TB patients to the general public. And I think SESM has come at the right time to help lay bare the dual burdens. Now, moving the TB HIV response from knowledge attitude to practice is our greatest concern today. Using the experiential approach of TB survivors and people living with HIV and AIDS to appeal to people's sensibilities and to influence behavior change, I want some of the strategies we are using currently. The willingness of HIV activists and support groups to confront TB through SESM seems to be the way that we are going to move. The genuineness and sincerity of TB and HIV ambassadors of hope in their work is something that helps. And of late, we have discovered that reaching out to people through the vernacular radio spots on TB is a very effective way. Listening to the responses and the call-ins, one is left, wondering how effective media can be, mass media can be, because people call in and ask all manner of questions, but very helpful questions. Reaching out to civic and administrative leaders through advocacy. Right now in Kenya, there is a general election going on. In fact, people are at the thick of the election campaign. And we are piggybacking on the election campaign for civic leaders and administrative leaders to carry the TB HIV message. And we are telling them, if you don't carry it, we don't vote you in. And this is coupled with community action on TB and HIV. At the same time, what helps is getting more TB suspects to take TB and HIV tests, bridging the gap in defaulter tracing, and this we are doing through TB HIV Ambassadors of Hope, or TB HIV Champions, who have come out voluntarily to help in getting suspects to go to test, availability of TB drugs and ARVs in our health system. PATH and NEFAC are currently broadcasting on Radio Together, and that partnership is powerful. Getting TB patients and survivors to share experiences that hurt and those that work also helps. What hurts? There are hurdles across the path of TB and HIV service integration, and I would like to mention them without fear. Territorialism and territorial tendencies between TB and HIV structures. While the whole concept of integration sounds and appears healthy and the right way to go, people still tend to hold on to their territories. And that hurts integration. And we think that should not continue. Exhaustion among health workers, the endless queues of TB patients and HIV patients that have to be seen, and the provider apathy and low morale due to large numbers of patients that they have to contend with every day. Stigma among health workers. In my country, and Lucy here is here to bear me up, those who are most stigmatized are health workers. You find no health workers in support groups of people living with HIV/AIDS. Why? They are afraid. Why are they afraid? It's stigma. And yet, they're the people who are providing service. There is also the disdain of experts towards non-medics. If service integration has to be successful, then medical personnel have to lift off that disdain and begin to appreciate the role of social scientists that work side by side with them. At policy level, what hurts? TB HIV community is not meaningfully involved in policy decision making. Inclusion alone, according to us, is not adequate. Parallel systems still in place, and yet they target one patient within one ministry. Why should there be parallel systems? There are lack of functional policy guidelines on referral of TB patients to HIV services and people living with HIV to TB services. Unless this is put in place, then integration is still a far cry. Parallel programs and activities still persist, yet we speak of collaboration. Joint program supervision is still a far cry, and we think if integration has to mean what it should mean, then there should be joint supervision, joint planning, joint M&E. Tokenism still pervades involvement of TB and HIV affected infected families at provincial, district and provincial level response. The mere fact that you have included a TB patient in a program without giving them the chance to stand up and say what they should say is tokenism to us. Lack of policy guideline of MDR, XDR, TB to date is worrying. Community private practitioners and traditional healers and faith healers are not involved in decision making, and yet they are part of the TB HIV response. If you think of the long and torturous route to treatment that many patients take, they go to faith healers, they go to traditional healers. And if we have to come up with a wholesome approach to the TB response, then we need these people in the loop. Lack of policy to protect health workers, and yet they are constantly exposed to TB infection, is hurting. Another thing that hurts is only one national teaching and referral facility in Kenya has health worker protection policy. The rest are unprotected. And there are also legal provisions that hurt. There are laws that were written in the early 60s that propose isolation of TB patients against human rights. Africa has declared TB an emergency, and yet member states still procrastinate. So the argument is, if our continent has seen it fit to declare TB an emergency, what are member states doing? Is it not an emergency, especially amongst the 22 high-burden countries? We shouldn't bargain with TB or entertain lethargy towards it. And for that reason, we have no weekends. I was employed to work for 5 days a week. I work 7 days, and I don't ask for extra payment. Laws that criminalize HIV transmission, especially one in Kenya which was recently passed but adulterated before it was passed, that criminalizes transmission of HIV. Another thing that hurts is meeting provider targets as opposed to focusing on client needs. If the provider is going to set targets that are not sensitive to client needs, then those targets are not being helpful. Long distances covered by patients to diagnostic centers and the cost implication of free treatment, the long queues and the long wait. The position of the TB chest clinic in relation to other sections of the health facility. The pill burden of TB and HIV treatment against hunger and starvation. The treatment defaulting due to crippling poverty is something that we need to address. Perhaps somebody should be addressing the causes of TB. The hidden costs of free treatment, and by that I mean if somebody has to be confined, the hidden costs include transport, the health facility, some of which take half a day to get there. And what helps at systemic level is that there are policy drafts on MDR, XDR. They are not yet to come in use. Draft communication and advocacy strategies are in use in Kenya. We are grateful. And the same strategy documents are used for community sensitization. Joint TB, HIV, lab, and PH provincial planning, but not at national level. Tools for referring TB patients to HIV services and TB tools that capture HIV. TB program screening for HIV while HIV program does not. Now, that is a gap in terms of what helps. Now, from disdain to appreciation, we see collaborative efforts in developing SCSM strategy documents together. We see collaborative policy document review and joint training in SCSM. We also see relief and acceptance of TB-HIV ambassadors of hope by health workers who were treated with disdain in the recent past. Volunteers are identifying with TB-HIV, something that was unheard of. What could be improved? There's need to consolidate the gains already made in TB-HIV collaborative services and tighten integration of TB-HIV diagnosis and treatment services. There will be need to map out what different partners are doing in the TB response and where they are. There will also be need to work towards making every health center a TB-HIV diagnostic and treatment center. There's need to target health workers with stigma reduction training, specifically. There's also need to identify other partners to support additional volunteers in the TB-HIV response. There's need to recruit and train more TB-HIV ambassadors of hope in each district because we have seen them bridging the gap. There's need to consider nutritional support to poor TB-HIV patients because without nutritional support, the treatment becomes very erratic. There's need to equip more health centers to provide diagnostic services and skilled staff to cope with the anticipated high rates of case detection now that TB-HIV ambassadors of hope are on the ground and are bringing in more cases. There's need to move to alleviate the lingering fear of infection and reinfection among TB-HIV ambassadors of hope due to the nature of their work. And there's need to reorient health workers in various sections to appreciate the critical need for integrating TB and HIV. And to enhance mobility of TB-HIV ambassadors of hope within the community and between the community and the health facility. Consider insuring health workers against the risk of infection at work. There's need to lobby HMOs to provide outpatient cover to PLHIV at the workplace. There are health management providers that do not provide insurance cover for people living with HIV at the workplace, and I think that is a looming gap. SCSM will need to focus on stimulating inquiry by patients so that the patients can demand and be told what they need or be given what they need. There's need to borrow a leave from the antenatal clinics and hold mediated health talks sessions with TB-HIV clients to help reduce stigma. There will be need to increase skilled staff at the health center. And lastly, there's need to develop an inventory of CSOs involved in TB-HIV response in the country, getting to know what other partners are doing in the TB-HIV response and collaboratively develop TB communication and advocacy strategy documents. Advocacy targeting civic and administrative leaders is something I've just mentioned. Lastly, I would like to say it's been a great pleasure standing here to share with you what hurts, what helps.
Thank you very much, Kefas. I think it's really interesting to listen from the civil society perspective of basically what hurts and what helps. And when I look back into Kenya and see what has been going on in the past years, I think we really need to appreciate the fact that the integration process has been ongoing and that there are lots of benefits that end up getting to the patients at the end of the day. And one of the greatest challenges I know basically is that we've actually had the TB community on board, and it's taken a while for the HIV community, but they're actually coming on board. And one of the things that I always say is that I would be happy the very day that actually the HIV community and the HIV clinics would totally screen TB patients for TB, because that would really help us to move the fight against TB-HIV co-infection further. Thank you very much, Kefas, for that presentation. And our next speaker is going to be Morera Leseka from South Africa, who's actually the National TB-HIV Training Coordinator for the Department of Health of South Africa. She is a professional nurse and a member of DINOSA, whose responsibilities include support for expansion of TB-HIV service integration at district level. So I take this opportunity to welcome Morero. Systems that basically support the patients. So we listen to the South African experience on that.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity to come and share with you the experiences on the ground pertaining to the referral system that supports the patient. The question is, where do they go from here? That is, after being diagnosed of TB, accessing counseling and testing, and being found to be HIV positive, where do they go from here? Do they remain in the TB service for treatment and follow-up on TB disease? And how do they access the care, the package of care that is offered those people that are infected with HIV and AIDS while they are in the TB program? Do we send them over to the HIV AIDS program for them to access that care? Or are they going to be able to access the care within whatever entry point that they enter the service with? So that is what we are going to look at today. So I will skip the presentation overview in order to save time. Traditionally, as we know, TB and HIV programs are vertical structures with little collaboration despite the close links between the diseases. I think my colleague from Kenya has indicated that we are dealing with one disease focusing on one goal. Yet, we have got two separate programs. We find that the two programs have got separate drug procurement system, supply, recording and reporting, and also the adherence support mechanism in both programs, which could be utilized if the two programs were working together. In South Africa, we have recently separated the HIV and AIDS cluster from the TB cluster. It used to refer to it as a HAST, that is HIV, AIDS, STI, and TB. Now we have got a HES plus a T, which can further impact on effective TB and HIV collaborative approach. Having a brief look at South Africa, currently we have got a 55 co-infection rate amongst the TB patients. That is according to the Medical Research Council study of 2002, which was reported in 2003. We also have a status where we have got facilities offering TB care, which are about 3,535 primary health care settings and 420 hospitals, with facilities accredited for ART being 359. And you can just imagine the number of TB facilities as opposed to the ART services. And with TB-HIV collaboration, we expect the HIV-infected person to be screened for TB and to be done a MONTU test and then access IPT. And this is mostly done in the accredited services. So we can see that the load, because of the variation with the load, if you are going to transfer 55% of patients from those facilities to the 359 facilities, so we still have to deal with that problem of accrediting more services. Okay. As it was introduced earlier that I'm working in the TB-HIV collaboration project, that is a project that is funded by the Kingdom of Belgium for the National Department of Health. Later, this project was also funded by Global Fund. The purpose of the project is to facilitate expansion of comprehensive TB, HIV, and STI prevention, management, care, and support in the district. And this we do in a phased approach, and we monitor and get the evidence of expansion by getting the number of sub-districts that are implementing and reporting on TB-HIV collaborative activities. And the poor referral system tends to impact on effective expansion of that TB-HIV collaboration. Now, the approach to TB-HIV service integration, like I've indicated, we've got two entry points. The TB entry point, we should actually provide a TB package of care inclusive of essential HIV and AIDS prevention, management, care, and support package. And the HIV entry point, which need to provide HIV package of care inclusive of TB prevention, management, care, and support. So I've highlighted some of the most critical activities within each package of care that tends to impact on the referral system that need to be considered to make sure that a patient is able to access the care appropriately irrespective of the entry point. The TB package of care should incorporate within its care the access to ARV when indicated. And they should be able to plan a TB follow-up which is linked to HIV and AIDS follow-up and wellness. And this is not easy to get with the current vertical approach to the care of the TB patient. The HIV-AIDS package of care should include the treatment for those that are co-infected with active TB. In other words, ideally we need to be able to let the HIV-positive patient that is also suffering from TB get the treatment in the same facility from the same service provider for us to make sure that the patient is getting comprehensive care. And then we need to plan a treatment follow-up which should be linked to, we should need to have a TB treatment follow-up which is linked to HIV and AIDS follow-up. Therefore, the appropriate referral system should be there to facilitate easy access to appropriate TB and HIV package of care across the two entry points. Okay, what could be the rationale for referring TB and HIV co-infected patients? Most of the time we need to have a vertical referral where the patient has to access different levels of care. These levels could be from ancillary levels, like we were talking about the previous presenter indicated the role of traditional healers. And these are some of the ancillary services that are there for TB and HIV co-infected patients. The person, there should be a referral system from ancillary to PHC level, and also a need to refer the patient from PHC level to the district or regional hospital for specialized treatment or to tertiary hospital. So those are the reasons why the co-infected patient may found himself having to be referred to the different levels. The question is, where is the patient referred from? Is the patient referred from the TB program across this level, or is the patient referred to from the HIV program across this level? And how is the information and the back referral information shared between the two services? That will be something that we need to look at. The other reason will be for the horizontal referral across the same level, be it the community health center level or the district level, for services of the multidisciplinary team within the same level of care. That would be an example of social workers, psychologists, dietitians, palliative care providers, etc. Currently in South Africa, we have the systems that are in place to support the referral of co-infected patients. And if I were to use the theme, today's theme, I could say that is what helps. We have got a clearly defined referral system for vertical referral of TB patients. I'm emphasizing vertical referral system. In other words, we have got a well-defined system within South Africa where you can follow up a TB patient from the primary healthcare setting to other primary healthcare services to the hospital or from one hospital to the other, including the MDR centers. So this they do in the form of a referral form. We've got a standardized referral form that gives the opportunity to write about the details of the patient, and also it gives the provision for acknowledgement slips by the receiving institution. In other words, when you refer the patient with this, using this form, the receiving institution will have all the information about the patient. The receiving institution will need to acknowledge the receipt. So we are able to trace the TB patient from one level to the other. The other aspect is that of having TB focal points in the focal points in the facilities. We have got the TB focal persons in the hospitals. If a person living with HIV and AIDS happens to be admitted for TB and diagnosed with TB, on discharge, the person has go through this TB focal person who will discuss the follow-up plan with the patient and indicating to which clinic the patient will be going to, depending on where the patient is coming from. As a result, there's a good discharge plan for a TB patient out of the hospital. The other aspect that helps, again, within the TB program is the standardized TB stationaries. We've got a patient health card that talks to the clinic card or the facility card. So because of the co-infection, the patient might actually refer himself to another facility, or for example to the hospital because of acute HIV-related conditions whilst on TB treatment. If the patient has got that card, wherever that patient is landing, the person there will be able to look at the card and know the situation of the TB status of the patient, what type of treatment the patient is getting, and so on. And you'll be able to see even on that card whether the patient is defaulting or is taking the treatment regularly. So that is what is good on the TB side, and that is what helps. The third aspect is the different models of TB and HIV integration. Maybe that's why I just put this as systems in place to support referral of co-infected patients. Because these models, some of them can help, some of them can hurt. Within the same model, you can get a help, and within the same model, you can get hurt. So the models of integrating TB-HIV, basically we have got three models that are utilized differently in different provinces and different facilities. We have got a model of total integration, which is a one-stop shop where you get everything within the same consulting room or within the same facility. in this model, it is easier for the patient to get the complete comprehensive package of care for TB and for HIV. And if the patient has to be referred to another facility, the information is consolidated into one patient card, and the information is known by the service provider within that model. And then the advantage of this model is that it is difficult to put it in place where there's a high patient load, because you can imagine if you have to do the counseling and do everything in one consulting room, what happens to those patients that are waiting outside? So it's good where the patient load is low. And the other model is that one of partial integration, where they still get the specialization for TB care and specialization for HIV care. But certain aspects of the HIV package is done by the TB person, and certain aspects of the TB package is done by the HIV service provider. For example, screening for TB and then providing INH prophylaxis, or offering VCT and providing cotrimoxazole prophylaxis. And then there's a need to refer for other acute opportunistic infection to other service. And then the last one is that one of the parallel, which is the most hitting, because there's no sharing of information. The other facility just specializes on HIV and AIDS. And when they look at the cough, the first thing that comes into their mind is it PCP? Is it community-acquired pneumonia, etc.? And the same applies to the TB specialization. When you talk about the cough and the temperature, they first think of the TB, and they never or delay thinking of HIV-related conditions. Okay, this is an example of the patient referral form that it's not easy to read, but at the top part mostly is about the patient details, and the lower part there is a part that the receiving facility has to detach and send back for acknowledgement. And the gaps in the current referral system, which are those that can lead to the head in the patient, also pertains to the vertical referral. In South Africa, in May 2006, a rapid assessment was done to look at the referral system. And this rapid assessment was supported by European Union and was done by our District Health Development Program. The findings were mainly from providers as key informant. And the main findings that, unlike the TB program, there was no well-established referral system for other patients, including HIV and AIDS patients. There was uncoordinated back referral, no feedback. If I'm a provider at a community health center and I refer the patient to the district hospital, I never know what has happened to the patient until I have to phone myself to try and find out what happened to the patient. So I'm not able to get that well-established feedback that is occurring according to the TB, in the TB system. There's no discharge follow-up system to check if the patient indeed reached the intended destination and whether the continuity of treatment is assured in line with availability of medication. What this means is that if the patient is referred back from the hospital to the community health center, you find that certain medications are not available at the community health center because they are not under the essential drug list, that is that EDL that we are utilizing in South Africa. And with a proper plan discharge follow-up, the referring center would have arranged with the district facility or the district pharmacy or the facility pharmacy to make sure that those medications are available or they are sent there in a prepacked form. So there is no standardized referral documentation, and currently that is what the intervention from the rapid appraisal will be looking at, to have standardized referral documentation. The other aspect is that of transportation of patients, where there's a delay in response time from emergency medical services to refer the patients to send the patient to the facility to which they are referred to. The other gap has to do with referral to other services, because as a TB patient and a TB HIV co-infected patient, you need to access other services like social assistance, like palliative care services. The TB patients are not getting the grant according to the rule, but if co-infected, that patient is supposed to get the social grant, but he struggles. He can only access that if that is done through the MDR TB centers. And again, with the palliative care, the hospices and home-based care facilities attribute their role only to HIV care, and they are reluctant to admit those patients that are co-infected, especially with MDR-TB. There's a fear of MDR-TB infection. And the other issue is that the definition of palliative care, what is it? Is it related to incurable diseases? Because TB is curable, TB is not chronic, this patient is not seen to qualify for palliative care. But when the patient is co-infected, then it is the problem. Okay, the recommendation lastly is to have a clear communication between referral stakeholders, to build capacity of the staff to manage co-infected patients and know available services, to have clear guidelines on referral process, and appreciation of the need for continuum of care at all levels, and to have a clear definition of palliative care, including palliative care for TB and HIV patients. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've just had the Kenyan experience, and now we've just finished listening to the South African experience. And I'll just request that you hold your questions until we're through with all the speakers, and then we shall have a session for Q&A. From Africa, now we move to Ukraine, and our next speaker is going to be Volodyma, who is going to give us a presentation of the experience based on confronting the dual stigma of TB and HIV in medical settings based on the Ukraine experience. You're welcome. And as it's being put up, what I'm going to say is that Volodyma is the chairman of the board of the All Ukraine Network of People Living with HIV and AIDS, which is dedicated to the idea that people living with HIV and AIDS should be central to the formation of policy and development of services and monitoring and implementation. The network was amazingly the winner of the Red Ribbon Award, which is given for achievements in overcoming the HIV and AIDS epidemic. The network was recognized for its work in overcoming stigma and discrimination towards HIV-positive people in Ukraine. So we'll listen to the Ukraine experience.
Добрий день, уважаемые дамы и господа. Мне очень приятно выступать на данной конференции. Спасибо организаторам, что предоставили эту возможность.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am very pleased to speak at this conference, and I really appreciate the opportunity provided by organizers of this session.
Украина. Украина – страна в Восточной Европе, граничит с Россией на востоке, с Белоруссией на севере, с Польшей, Венгрией, Словакией на западе и Румынией и Молдовой на юго-западе. Население нашей страны – 47 миллионов.
Ukraine is an Eastern European country which borders with Russia, Belarus, Moldova, Romania, Poland, Slovakia and Hungary. And the population of the country is 46.5 million.
На сегодняшний день, по оценкам ВОЗ и UNAIDS, в Украине инфицировано более полмиллиона человек вирусом ВИЧ. Это составляет 1,4% взрослого населения страны. Самое быстрое распространение ВИЧ-инфекции в регионе в основном за счет потребителей инъекционных наркотиков.
The estimated incidence rate of HIV in Ukraine currently is 1.5. Actually, Ukraine has 500,000 people living with HIV/AIDS based on estimation, and it's about 1.4 percentage of adult population prevalence. And Ukraine has the highest incidence growth in Europe for today.
Стигма. В нашей стране каждый пациент, обратившийся в общую систему здравоохранения, он уже стигматизирован и будет дискриминирован врачом.
About stigma in general in healthcare settings, each patient in Ukraine who came to the healthcare system, independent of their status, are discriminated and stigmatized already just because they are patients.
Потому что врач с очень низкой зарплатой на каждого пациента смотрит как на потенциальный источник нелегального дохода.
Because the doctors, the salary of doctors is very low and they look at patients as their potential source of illegal income.
Говоря о ВИЧ-позитивных больных туберкулезом, в медицинской системе здравоохранения недоступна экстренная помощь, такая, например, скорая помощь, хирургическая помощь. Врачи отказывают пациентам от предоставления медицинской помощи.
And speaking particularly about the HIV-TB co-infected patients, the health care is really not accessible and affordable for them because very often even the emergency care they are refused to provide by physicians.
Детей очень тяжело устроить в детские сады, школы. Нередки случаи отказа в приеме детей в эти учреждения.
HIV-positive children, they don't have really possibility to visit children gardens, schools. Very often they are refused by providers or by communities.
ВИЧ-позитивных людей увольняют с работы. Происходит разглашение тайны диагноза.
The lack of confidentiality in the healthcare settings leads to the firing of HIV-positive people from their working places.
Стигма среди общего населения очень велика. Нередки случаи, когда родители отказываются от своих детей ВИЧ-позитивных, соседи, люди стигматизируются соседями, и это вызывает у людей желание уехать из своих городов, своего места жительства.
And also the stigma among the general population against people living with HIV and co-infected people is very high, and very often it leads that people need to move to leave their settings and to move to another cities, change their style of life, and because of their neighbors, because of their, especially in small cities.
Медицинская помощь и социальная помощь в принципе недоступна в малых городах и селах.
And there is no access to the health care and to the social care in the rural areas and in the small towns.
Отсутствие диагностики нелегочного туберкулеза у ВИЧ-позитивных.
The extrapulmonary TB diagnostic is really very low in the possibility to diagnose extrapulmonary TB is really low in all settings in the country.
Ситуация в местах лишения свободы, в тюрьмах, просто ужасная. Диагноз ВИЧ-инфекция и туберкулез зачастую является смертным приговором.
In prisons, the TB-HIV co-infection, this diagnosis very often means the death sentence because there are no access and they would be twice discriminated because of their diagnosis.
Все эти факторы говорят о следующем, что смертность среди ВИЧ-инфицированных от туберкулеза превышает 60%.
And currently in the country, the TB is responsible for 60% of all deaths among HIV-positive people.
В данной презентации мы старались не только рассказать о стигме и дискриминации, но и показать то, что собирается наша организация делать для решения этого вопроса.
But this presentation is not only to reflect how bad everything is, but also what is our organization doing and what is going to do to address this issue.
Интегрированный подход – краеугольный камень для равного доступа к качественному лечению для наиболее уязвимых групп.
So the integrated approach to care of the most vulnerable groups of people is the cornerstone of successful results.
Проблемы равного доступа в нашей стране.
There are problems for equal access to care in our country.
Это быстрое расширение масштабов охватов антиретровирусным лечением. Начиная с 2003 года, более 5000 человек были взяты на программы антиретровирусного лечения. А программа ДОЦ началась только, была официально принята в нашей стране только в 2006 году.
The antiretroviral treatment started in Ukraine in 2003 only, and by now there are 5,000 people on treatment on ARV, and the DOTS was approved as a national program only since the beginning of 2006.
Параллельные системы туберкулезного и ВИЧ-сервиса, отсутствие взаимодействия между этими системами и между врачами.
The coordination between TB services and HIV services is very poor at all levels of healthcare.
Разрыв между проектами снижения вреда и программами лечения. Отсутствие мостиков, так называемых drop-in zone, комьюнити-центров для потребителей инъекционных наркотиков.
There is no connection between the harm reduction programs and TB and HIV programs and also treatment programs, and there are no bridges, like so-called drop-in zones, between the community centers and services for injection drug users.
Большинство маргинализированных клиентов не доходят до стандартной инфраструктуры ВИЧ-сервиса. Такая категория клиентов часто никогда не посещала спеццентры и после получения диагноза, и часто оказываются в стационарах, туберкулезных стационарах на терминальной стадии ВИЧ-инфекции и туберкулеза.
Majority of the marginalized group, of most vulnerable groups, never seek HIV services, and they never visited HIV centers for diagnostic or treatment, if even they know they are HIV positive. But and very often they are hospitalized at the very last terminal stages of TB to the TB dispensaries when it is really late to provide care to them.
Существует явная необходимость создания инновационных сервисов с основным упором на маргинализированные группы.
So it's a clear need to conduct the innovative services to address the needs of the most vulnerable, most marginalized groups of people.
Основные принципы организации медицинского ухода для ВИЧ-инфицированных потребителей инъекционных наркотиков.
The main principles of healthcare system for HIV-positive injective drug users.
Эти принципы были утверждены Всемирной организацией здравоохранения в 2006 году. Уход должен быть доступным.
They were approved by WHO in 2006. And first is that it should be equal care and accessible care.
Многосторонние программы воздействия и комплексный уход. Принцип универсама. Доступность наибольшего количества услуг для людей с двойной проблемой ВИЧ, туберкулез в одном месте.
Comprehensive programs and the complex care should be available at one settings, and it's a so-called principle of department store.
Должен осуществляться пошаговый подход. Пациентам должен предлагаться такой уход, который они способны принять.
It should, the approach to care should be organized step by step, and it should be offered to patients. Such care should be offered that they are able to really accept and follow.
Проведение аутрич работы является жизненно необходимым компонентом ухода при ВИЧ-инфекции. Самые эффективные программы установили связь с организациями сообществ и использовали их как инструкторов аутрич и консультантов, приглашенных из уязвимых групп.
The outreach work is one is the key for care in, for HIV positive people, and the most effective programs were based on a peer education when the service providers or trainers were invited from the were trained from the vulnerable populations.
Планы всеукраинской сети людей, живущих с ВИЧ, по внедрению модели интегрированных услуг в Украине.
So what are the plans of the all Ukrainian network of the people living with HIV AIDS to implement the model of integrated services in Ukraine?
Обеспечить создание и принятие необходимой регуляторной и методологической базы для интеграции сервисов согласно руководствам ВОЗ 2006 года.
To support the creation of a required regulatory, normative, and legal and methodological database and documents for integrated services, according to the in conjunction with the WHO recommendations of 2006.
Создать 10 пилотных сайтов интегрированных услуг на основе принципа универсама – концентрации оптимального количества наиболее важных служб в одном месте.
To start from 10 pilot projects of the integrated care services based on this department store principle to concentrate the most needed services at one settings.
Обеспечить доступ к заместительной терапии для пациентов с коинфекцией ВИЧ и туберкулез на основе стандартной модели, охватить до 3000 новых пациентов.
To assure access to substitutional therapy for TB-HIV co-infected patients who need this and to cover up to 3,000 patients with the substitutional therapy.
Обеспечить эффективную диагностику туберкулеза и курс лечения на месте с обеспечением приверженности, то есть курсом ДОЦ, как часть универсама.
To assure the effective TB diagnostic and treatment adherence as a part of this department store principle.
И, конечно же, обеспечить долгосрочную и эффективную техническую помощь от ведущих экспертов в области антиретровирусного лечения для потребителей инъекционных наркотиков, потому что сегодня в Украине более 75% случаев всей ВИЧ-инфекции в среде потребителей инъекционных наркотиков.
And to assure the availability of long-lasting and like, permanent support by the international and national experts on HIV and injective drug use for people living with HIV/AIDS, because today in Ukraine about 75% of all HIV-positive people are injective drug users.
В первую очередь обеспечить возможность получения антиретровирусной терапии совместно с заместительной терапией и эффективными программами по приверженности.
So first of all, the most priority is to organize the comprehensive programs of ARV treatment together with the, in conjunction, in combination with substitutional therapy and the effective program on adherence.
Туберкулезная диагностика на месте. Манту-тест, сбор мокроты, доступ к туберкулезным препаратам, тройной терапии, терапии ДОЦ и заместительной терапии, как для профилактического курса, так и для лечения.
To assure the TB diagnostic availability in the, this diagnostic settings, alternative to the official system, and to organize the sputum collection, access to TB drugs, and for prevention and for treatment.
Связь с программами психиатрической помощи, реабилитационными программами, включая детоксикацию.
to establish connection with the programs of psychiatric and psychological care and support, and also including detoxification program and rehabilitation.
Обеспечить тесную взаимосвязь с сообществом потребителей инъекционных наркотиков, программами обмена шприцов, использование комьюнити-центров для потребителей инъекционных наркотиков как основное звено для сопровождения и ведения пациентов.
To use the community centers for people living with for people using injected drug users as the main unit to follow and to assure and to follow the patients, and also to create the linkages with the programs of syringe exchange and outreach.
Усилить такой компонент, как социальная помощь и уход на дому, и обеспечить эффективную регуляторную работу мультидисциплинарной команды с основным упором на равное консультирование и сопровождение аутрич пациентов.
To support and to assure the social care and social support at homes, and to assure the effective and regular work of the multidisciplinary teams for care and for treatment.
Препятствия. Какие на сегодняшний день есть у нас препятствия?
What are the barriers for today to implement all this?
Разрыв, опять же, разрыв между службами туберкулеза, наркологии, заместительной терапии и ВИЧ-сервисом.
Lack of collaboration between TB services, narcology, and HIV services, as well as substitutional therapy. Absence.
Номинальные ДОЦ-программы. На сегодняшний день нет реально завершенной ДОЦ-модели пилотной, которую можно презентовать.
Because DOTS started so late in the country, there are only nominal, so-called nominal DOTS programs, and there are no finished DOTS pilot, which might be the model to roll out in the country.
Отсутствие методологической и регуляторной базы для интегрированных программ.
A lack of a normative and legislative base to start the integrated programs.
Лицензирование учреждений на использование наркотических препаратов – это очень большая проблема для запуска программ заместительной терапии.
The barrier for substitutional treatment programs is the lack difficulties in licensing of the healthcare settings to use drugs.
Отсутствие опыта со стороны программ снижения вреда для работы в области лечения и ухода.
And lack of experience of on care and support programs.
Я хочу сказать, почему мы за это все взялись, почему сеть людей, живущих с ВИЧ, взялась за это.
So, I just want to explain why the network of people living with HIV/AIDS decided to take the responsibility about this huge comprehensive program.
Потому что сеть – это первая организация сообщества ЛЖВ в регионе, номинированная на выполнение деятельности по проекту Глобального фонда как основной реципиент, осуществляя тесную работу с правительством.
So the network, All Ukrainian Network, was the first non-governmental organization of PLHA in the region who were approved by Global Fund as the principal recipient of Round 6.
Сильная позиция сети как адвоката и катализатора реформ здравоохранения и регуляторных изменений.
Network proved already to be the very strong advocate and the catalyzer of reforms in the healthcare and the legislative base in the region and in the country.
У нас есть уже успешный двухлетний опыт ведения национальных программ по уходу, лечению и поддержке для людей, живущих с ВИЧ. И на сегодняшний день сеть оказывает услуги более чем 25 тысячам ВИЧ-позитивных людей.
We already have 2 years successful project for treatment, care and support for people living with HIV/AIDS in the country, and for today the network provides services, comprehensive services for 20,000 people in the country already.
Мы осознаем, что задача у нас очень большая и практически очень трудновыполнимая, но личная мотивация добиваться равного доступа для маргинализированных групп у нас также очень велика, и мы надеемся, что у нас все получится.
We clearly realize that we have this a very ambitious program and it's really a very difficult program, but we are very personally motivated to conduct this program and to assure success for all people living with HIV in country, and we are pretty sure that we'll manage to do this successfully.
Спасибо за внимание.
Thank you very much.
I also want to say thank you to our country director from Ukraine, Dr. Katya Gamazina, for acting as our interpreter this morning. Thank you, Katya.
Okay, we're going to listen to our next presenter, who comes from Cambodia, Chantal Eang, who is going to give us a presentation on improving integrated care for HIV-positive people with TB and community health workers. Chantal is a care and treatment coordinator for the Family Health International's HIV and TB project in Cambodia.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to be here to share with you the experience in Bat Damong province, Cambodia, related to integrated care for HIV-positive people with TB. As you can see in the slide, is the map of Cambodia. It located in Southeast Asia and it bounded with Laos, Thai, and Vietnam. And at the red point, it's the Bat Damong province. There, HIV activity has been implemented there. Before 2003, there are no linkage between the two programs, HIV AIDS and TB program at the Bat Damong province, and there are no clear referral system between the two programs. VCT client with found HIV positive result, they went home with only the informative material provided by VCT counselor, and they miss opportunity to get the access to care and treatment. And the TB patient also have no access to VCT for HIV counseling and testing. In late 2002, the National TB AIDS framework was approved by Ministry of Health, and later on in 2003, the framework of continuum of care for people living with AIDS was also approved by Ministry of Health of Cambodia. And at the same year, in late 2003, this pilot of TB, the framework of TB HIV framework and the model of continuum of care for people living with AIDS was applied in Bat Damong province. And during that time, the development of the referral mechanism between the two programs, TB and HIV, was established. And this the TB-HIV diagram, diagnosis and referral in the TB-HIV framework. As you can see at the left-hand side is the TB control program. Under the TB program, we have TB services, TB dot, and at the right-hand side is the HIV control program, and we have COC, which is a continuum of care, provided HIV care services. So I would like to share with you this linkage between TB-HIV services in Bat Damong province. There are two types of VCT in Bat Damong province. One is in the river hospital, and another type of VCT is outside of the river hospital. It's mainly at the health center level. And HIV positive people found at the health center were referred to OI ARV services in the River Hospital, and the OIRT service staff will further refer the patient to the TB ward for TB diagnosis and treatment. And from the TB side, actually in Cambodia, in Battambang province, TB diagnosis and treatment we have at all the River Hospital and also have at all the health center. So TB patient found at the health center or at the River Hospital were referred to VCT nearby. And at the same as the other people, when they found HIV positive among TB patients, they will refer to the patient to OIRT service. So as you know, in Cambodia, VCT is important entry point for people living with AIDS to get care and treatment. All the, as you see the previous slide, the HIV patient found at the HIV positive person found at the VCT site were referred for OIRT services in the River Hospital. And there, the OIRT services have the close link with the TB screening and diagnosis. For those who are enrolled for OIRT service, I mean that the HIV positive that already enrolled in HIV positive, the follow-up TB screening is performed if only they have the suspect symptom of TB, and the performance is performed during their visit for OIRT care and treatment, and or during the pre-assessment for ARV provision. And those who found HIV, who found the TB active, TB staff will provide the TB drug either at the River Hospital or at the health center. And so if the patient is the first 2 months, they have to come to the River Hospital or the health center every day. And so when they first found to have HIV, to have the TB disease, they will refer. They will ask the patient whether they live at nearby the River Hospital or at the health center. So if they live at the River Hospital, so they have to come to the River Hospital. But if they live far away from the River Hospital, they will refer to the health center nearby. And after the process of screening, the TB staff will provide information to the OIRT staff using the stamp. As you can see in the slide, the book using by the it's due by the people living with AIDS for the OIRT services. At the back of the book, the TB staff will stamp the status of the TB of the patient, whether they have the active TB or they have no active TB. And they also write down the date of the screening. And default tracing for TB patient is performed by health center staff and also by home-based care if they are under the care of the home-based care. At the OIRT site, the TB HIV patient also get the treatment from the OIRT service according to the health at prophylaxis or treatment. And in addition to that, ARV drug will also provide to eligible people living with AIDS regardless TB status. And ARV on HIV TB patients were provided after they get the TB treatment for 2 weeks, or they get the treatment for 2 months according to the CD4. If the CD4 count is less than 100, the treatment for the ARTV provided after 2 weeks of treatment or 2 or 4 weeks of treatment, and if the CD4 count is more than 100 to 250, the ARTV provided after 2 months of after the beginning of the 2 months of treatment. So to improve the adherence of the patient, the drug counseling will perform during the visit, each visit of the patient. And home-based care also to play an important role in patient follow-up, tracing, and reinforcing the drug adherence during they do the home visit and the home care. So just show you the flow of the TB, flow of the HIV patient within the OIAT service in the River Hospital. When the patient come to the service, first they go to the triage, and there the staff there develop the documentation for the filling the document and for the patient, and send them to meet the doctor at the OPD for examination and consultation. And from the consultation, after visit, after seeing the patient, see the patient, the doctor send them to the pharmacy to get drug. And the after the getting drug, the last section is the drug education to make sure that the patient, the people with AIDS, understand clearly about the drug use, how to use the drug, and how to manage when they have the side effect, and when they have to come back to meet the doctor. And at the community level, the home-based care follow up the treatment, and during they do the home visit and the home care. So the activity of the triage, as you can see in the slide, in the picture, the first patient go to the triage, and then they go to the meet the patient for examination and consultation. And from after that, they will go to get the drug at the pharmacy, and there the head, the staff, the head staff provides some information related to using the drug, whether they understand how to use the drug properly. From this this one, they go to the drug counseling room, and the staff there, actually they have the staff, the head staff, and the PLHA who play the role of the counselor. So they are the PLHA who provide the drug counseling to the patient. So at the community level, the home-based care team go to see the patient at home to reinforce for drug counseling, and also provide the basic care to the patient. And just to show you some picture related to activity, we say Mandolmat treatment translated as friend help friend. That is help to we say reduce the discrimination between the healthcare provider and this patient, and also this very important for the patient to share the experience and support each other during the AMAMA activity. And they also reinforce the positive living. And this lesson learned that we get from the SAI, so the support and participation of the home-based care team is important for the patient follow-up and referral. And consistent education and counseling very important and for the treatment adherence. And as also already mentioned, the MMM activity that will be held every month. So this also very important to make the patient to a good treatment adherence. So the referral system between HIV, TB, HIV, open access for early treatment for care and treatment for PLHA and TB patient. And TB dot services and communion of care must be going along with each other. If we have only TB but we do not have the care for people living with AIDS, so they get only the TB services, but they do not get the service for HIV. And the same time, if we have only the care for people living with AIDS, but we do not link these to the TB services, so they got only the services care for people living with AIDS. HIV services, but the patient did not get the TB treatment or TB diagnosis for the health. So to make the two programs link together well, we have to make the team building within the TB HIV program, and the two teams should be meet frequently for connection. The last thing is transportation support, because in Cambodia most of the people living far away from the referral hospital, and the services OIAT service mainly in the referral hospital, so it's the lack of transportation, so they also it's hard to access the services. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chantel. As he was presenting, I remembered this statement that one person made, and it goes by, the 100-year-old TB is now married to the young HIV, and the honeymoon is causing a lot of havoc. But we've actually seen from the Cambodian experience that they've actually been able to turn desperation into hope, and it's amazing to see the women seated on the floor with smiling faces to actually know that there's a difference when it comes to integration of TB-HIV services together, and looking at the process that they actually have to go through to be able to get the services is quite interesting. So our final speaker is going to be Ezio Santos. We're going to hear from the Brazilian experience in terms of beyond pills. How do we support clients in basic TB and HIV services? Because many a times when somebody is both TB-HIV co-infected, the pill burden goes high, and we are going to hear from him. Now, Ezio is an attorney and activist from Brazil. He's a person who's been living with HIV for 17 years now. Amazingly, he's been able to have TB twice in the process of the 17 years. And he's one person, an activist, who's been able to raise the voice globally in terms of advocating for TB, TB and HIV, and advocacy and ACSM also within the TB components. He has served on the Global Fund board representing the civil society delegation, and currently he sits on the Stop TB coordinating board as the community representative together with Pavez. So I'll take this opportunity to invite Ezio to give us the Brazilian experience. Thanks.
Leon, she's coming for sure. Hello, everybody. It seems that I have a problem with my presentation that's not uploaded. I've been there twice and yet not uploaded. Well, as for your patients,
can you just reboot the computer and see if it helps?
I have it here. Thank you.
In the meantime, while we're dealing with logistics, it would be great if we could get two more chairs for the question and answer session. So if anybody at the back can help us with that, that would be great.
Okay, there we go.
Bravo.
thanks, Pat, for the invitation, Darcy and Lucy, for the kind invitation. And it's a pleasure to be here sharing some ideas with you. I'll try to be concise because after long presentations, we just want to heat things up. So the idea is to discuss what, how do we support and how do we actually support in an effective and a sustainable way on through both TB and HIV patients. Basically, what hurts we have seen before. I've been with our former presenters. I mean, people face TB and HIV treatment have to deal with several difficulties, which are absolutely commonplace for us all. I mean, pill burden, high toxicity, and concomitant concomitant schemes when you have to take both. I can tell because although I'm not resistant to any TB drug, I had twice. I am a long-term AIDS survivor. I have been taking ARVs for 17 years. I started with AZT monotherapy. I went through all the monotherapies and then the strange combinations and then had some opportunistic infections along the 90s and almost died a few times. And then back in 2002, the year when I started working with TB, I had TB. And I can tell you it's a nightmare to take ARVs, especially for those who are taking many medications as I do. For example, now I take 7 antiretrovirals, and to use them with the TB medication. So I had to change my therapy, the TB therapy, 5 times to find a scheme that I could tolerate. And I was not resistant to any one of them, but I developed a terrible allergies, and I had a very serious liver problem because of the high toxicity. But that's my case. I'm a middle class person. I can handle things like this. But what the basically 90% of people affected with TB around the globe, they have to deal with malnutrition, and they have to have very serious limitations to access service, which is not my case, but that's the case of the great majority of people we work with and the community people, and obviously the basic issues regarding the poor living conditions. So, and to make it worse, I mean, we have a huge lack of information, I mean, and support for the people with TB and co-infected people. It's funny because I have been repeating this in the last few days. I mean, I've met Zaki Ahmed a couple of years ago in New York, and we were, and he was making fun with me. He said, "Now, as you just work with TB, what's up?" And so where did we miss the point? I think, well, we actually did miss the point. I mean, the AIDS activists didn't pay enough attention of what was going on in TB. I mean, TB is our biggest killer, and we have to deal with that. And if we tackle it properly, I mean, we would reduce morbidity and mortality enormously. But there is a huge lack of information, and I'm talking about people who are informed. I'm saying AIDS activists. I can't imagine the common society. I mean, the common citizen doesn't have a clue of what is going on TB in their countries. People in Europe think they are fine and they are distant from the problem. I mean, they are in Lisbon. I mean, and the figures are like in Rio or in other high burden areas. In Paris itself or in London, you have districts with a huge incidence. So nobody's far from it, and we have to find ways to make it. it worked. But and so what helps? I mean, I think anything can help in there. But what and how? No? We should assess the patient's needs, basically. This, I mean, patients are not very heard. I mean, TB is this disease which has been taken since the late 19th century, and all these lung physicians with very traditional forms to work and a very, very respectful and distant way to treat the patient, and therefore they don't have a clue of the patient's need, and to aggravate the situation, in the health systems we have a very poor, an increasingly worsening situation for the healthcare people. So they definitely don't have much time or conditions to care about the patient's need. And we all know that we actually need urgently new drugs, and we need better and shorter schemes for treatment. We need new diagnostics because, for example, I myself took 40 days to have a diagnostic. I mean, I have 3 sputum direct microscopy were negative, and 2 cultures were negative. I mean, because people with AIDS like me can't be properly diagnosed with the methods we have. So how to deal with this thing without new diagnostics? And I only had a positive culture out of my bronchoscopy. And how many people can do that? And when I had TB, I had 0 CD4. I'm in a protocol of but I have survived for 2.5 years without CD4. I'm a vision. I'm not here. I'm not supposed to be alive anyway. But the thing is that I have survived, and when I had TB, the lung physician said, I'm not going to do the bronchoscopy in you because it's too invasive and it's very risky in your conditions. You have no defense whatsoever. But we had to do, and finally from the bronchoscopy and the culture out of the bronchoscopy, my first diagnosis was made. And finally, we have to have effective vaccines. There is a common misunderstanding about BCG. People think it protects adults, protects you against TB throughout your life. I mean, we have to explain people that BCG works for children and for meningitis TB, but mostly not for the rest. And when you are six years old, that's gone. And we have to have effective vaccines, and we know that they are on their way. But can we stop with? Can we wait without support? That's the obvious answer. No, we cannot wait for any response. So what to do? We have to empower intensively the community. We need the organizations to engage in direct support. I mean, the Ukrainian network of people living with AIDS has given a beautiful example. The previous presenters from Kenya, South Africa, and Cambodia have already shown what can be done officially in terms of governmental support, some kind of support to the community. But I mean, also we community organizations and people affected, we have to engage in helping the peers to find basic support and complementary treatments. We have to, even in very resource poor countries, we have to find to organize, empower the communities, the organizations, to help the patients reaching the services, adhering to treatment, having treatment some treatment literacy, so they understand that they have to complete that treatment, not to create what we are facing now with MDR and XDR TB, and basically providing information to the peers and obviously provide information for the whole society as well. And for that, money is needed. We cannot do that for free. I mean, the things cost. I mean, there is cost of transportation, and more communities are seen as we will pop out with solutions. solutions, and we should provide things and having money from nowhere, literally. And that's what's happening with the AIDS organizations, and we are trying to put TB in the agenda of the AIDS organizations. So we need money. And what else? We need massive support, massive awareness raising activities. I mean, for the general population. Again, I have done work. I have started doing social mobilization work back in Brazil back in 2002. And the same year, that was a very, very rich year because I started doing TB, social mobilization in Brazil. There was nothing in the country regarding TB. So we started with the social mobilization in Rio and then in São Paulo. And internationally, that was the first year we did first a workshop to mobilize AIDS organizations to do work with TB and with the co-infection at the Union Conference, which was in Montreal with Treatment Action Group. So, but we have, and out of all the experiences that I have seen in Brazil and we have seen throughout the world, there are massive ignorance of what is going on. People don't have a clue. So we were working with TB, we tend to imagine that people know how the problems are. People don't. And we have to remind people that. We have to insist that. We have to go on campaigns that clarifies the situation and let people understand that if at least we would take the actual tools properly, we would have a much smaller problem, because the actual tools that we have to treat TB, although they are very old fashioned and not so efficient, because it takes 6 to 8 months at least to treat a patient who is not resistant, it can cure you if it's done properly. But it has not been done properly. That's why we have this TB problem throughout the world. And educational activities in general that will reduce ignorance. And with information, we reduce stigma and we reduce discrimination, and then we will be walking through to the right place. But that all will solve the problem? Obviously not. I mean, we to change the reality, and that's what we want. We don't want small measures. We want structural changes. That's what we need. Because what is not working is our services, the way we work. And I tell you, physicians and managers, the way you work is not working, because you have to revise your methodologies. You have to revise the way you work. You have to be bold enough to admit that. I mean, people in tuberculosis are not used to do that, but you have to learn again. I mean, we have to go down this situation of distance to the patient, distance from listening to the community. It is, sorry to use the word, but F-boring to hear a community activist for some physicians. Last year we had in the second national meeting on TB, which is a big Brazilian TB conference, and it was funny because the many physicians and researchers were writing after the conference finished to the organizers, complaining there were too many activists there. I mean, there were too many people affected. I mean, they are not used to listen to these people. I mean, but we are here. I'm sorry, but we will stay and we will knock your door and we will make your life difficult. So, but to change, to do structural change, what do we need? We need data. I mean, you are not going to convince any policymaker without reliable data. You have to prove that. I mean, in Brazil, there are wonderful, not say the horrible examples. For example, why DOTS has not been implemented in all these years? DOTS was recommended officially in Brazil back in 1999. And why it was not implemented? Because there was an academic discussion going for 10 years if dots was better than non-dots, because scientifically it was not proved. And so this academic discussion was letting people without proper treatment. And here we are. We are the 16th worst situation in the world. We are a high-burden country. Although we have pills on the shelters of the public pharmacies, treatment is free of charge in my country. So, I mean, this—that's what the territorialism that the colleague from—sorry to call you a colleague—I am just a community member. But since Lucy referred to you so warmly, I dare to call you a colleague. But definitely, we have to produce this data, and how to produce it? I mean, we have to do some monitoring activities and assessments in consistent ways. And I give an example. I have done this homework. I have done this work. I mean, I analyze the TB policy. I am an undergraduate in law, and I have my master's in international relations. Regarding the AIDS epidemic and the role of the social movement. But I have done this work, and that was the first time ever a person affected with TB has written something about TB policies. Actually, there has never been written something specifically on TB policy in my country, although we have a history of over 100 years of fighting TB. So this is the kind of monitoring we have been doing. I have done this work with the Open Society Institute, which has been promoting the same initiative in other countries. I will get some copies in English here and in Portuguese. There will be at the booth of the Open Society Institute more reports from African countries and Asian countries. So, but besides this consistent ways of doing monitoring and assessment activities without a very rigid academic model, we also have to have operational research. We have to have collect data in a very academic way, because that's what decision makers will consider. If you don't have that, I mean, you don't come to the table to negotiate, because they won't listen to you. And we want, again, structural changes. The way we deal with TB is just wrong. And we cannot be meeting and repeating things and going like a dog trying to bite his own tail. I mean, we are going in circles because we have to change. We have to stop and see how we work and revise it and change it. And so we need operational research. And this research can be dedicated to evaluate, for example, under my perspective to what I am in my field, I mean, as a patient, it can assess patients' needs, the patient's limitations, patient satisfaction, and a huge, huge, enormous, endless quantity of possibilities of doing research and collecting data. Plus, through operational research, you can analyze service delivery and treatment methods, and then revise the way you deliver service. So we need operational research. And who can do this? We can. Even we, community people, can. I did. I mean, it didn't cost that much. I mean, that was done with the whole 1 year of research and publishing this and making it possible. It was done with $10,000. I mean, that doesn't cost so much, and it can have a huge impact. I mean, 4,000 copies of this in Portuguese have been already distributed, and over 2,000 copies in English has also been distributed about this. And this can be a good contribution. I mean, that's just an example, and I'm not saying here is the solution, but this is something that we can do. And so we have to engage in producing data to change our realities. And let's approach academia. I mean, normally people think that academia is something so distant. It's not. I mean, after I I graduated in law back in 88, and in 99 I went to do my master's. I mean, so we have to visit the academia sometimes. We have to sit down at the school and learn again. And that's a message that I'm sending to the NTP managers and to the physicians. You have to learn again. I mean, you have to be, we all have to sit and study, and we have to engage and communicate with academia. And so, and let's remember HIV and AIDS, the JIPA principle. The JIPA means, it stands for, I mean, with all the acronyms that you must be, I mean, overwhelmed with all the acronyms. But for those who are familiar with AIDS, the JIPA principle is the great integration of people with AIDS, which means like nothing for us without us. That's the principle. But that's intends to put people with AIDS involved in all actions against States. And let's do the same with TB. Let's have people affected with TB, people co-infected, to be involved in that. And definitely, if we don't produce the information that we need, giving our perspective from things, others will do. For example, in my country, there is a huge xenophobia about foreigners doing research or conducting research in the country. There is a real xenophobia from some academics and governmental people because they think we are being invaded and so on and so forth. I mean, although Brazil is one of the greatest investor in research and research and development in TB according to the TAG report, it's still very little. But people in the South tend to have a sensation that research conducted from the North and the Northern perspective is actually just using the Zoran people. But if we don't do it, I mean, others will always do. So, I mean, it's up to us. It's up to us, to each one of us, to produce information, to produce data, and to collect it in different forms, be that academic, not so formal. But we have to do that, and otherwise somebody will do for us. And again, that's what I have already said regarding the patients and physicians. I mean, we definitely have to reduce this distance. It's tough. I'm not ignoring the situation of healthcare workers. I mean, I know exactly how they go through. I mean, I understand perfectly. I mean, the conditions are absurd. I mean, a physician who dedicates 7 days a week work receives, in my country, an average of, let's say, the top payment in my state is like $600 for a physician with full dedication. I mean, that's absurd, you know. In other countries, it can be even worse. I mean, so it's hard to understand for how people can be, how can they do a proper work without so little payment and bad conditions and very little respect from the services. But and again, we have to break this image of superiority that physicians have and researchers have, because I'm sorry, but you don't know much. If you did, I mean, we wouldn't be in this situation. Hello? I mean, we are in this horrible situation because we made it. I mean, you. I'm sorry, because, I mean, the physicians and the NTP managers have been doing lousy work, sorry to say. And to finalize, I got to give three examples from Brazil. Not necessarily good. The first one, I mean, we are, it's very shameful for me to say that we are the 16th worst situation in the planet, when we have done actually a homework back in the 80s. We started back in 79 until 88, what so-called the the sanitary reform, which revised the health system in Brazil. We had a contributive system that where people should pay for the services, like the American system and other systems. We changed that. We adopted a universal system based in the former European approach, which no longer exists. When Europe was destroying its universal system, we were building ours. Still on its way. It's far to be complete, but actually we have universal access. Medication is free of charge. And I tell you, I know my country very well. I have been, for example, to Western Amazonian region, to Midwest Brazil. Brazil itself, it's the size of entire Western Europe, Scandinavia included. So it's big, a lot. It's huge. The country is big. And I have visited all parts of the country, and I can tell you, TB medication is there. There is no shortage of medication. And for MDR-TB is not a big problem in my country, and that's very well delivered. But there is TB medication on the shelters of the public pharmacy. Even if you have TB and try to buy medication in a private pharmacy, you won't find it because you are obliged to go to a public service. So that's the absurd. That's a contrasense. You have medication there. It's free of charge. It's there available. And yet we have the 16th worst situation in the planet. What explains that? Having medication is not enough. We need far more beyond pills. But we have been having a governmental changing its policy. As I said, for example, officially we adopted DOTS in 1999, and nothing from the federal level has been done. Only some municipalities and some states have done something in my country, but the federal government has done nothing between 1999 and 2004. Regarding DOTS, they definitely put the policy on the desk. But since 2004, it did change because of the pressure, the international pressure, the pressure that the states and the municipalities did because they did work, and the communities that started being mobilized. So the government is moving fast, and we have very active. We have a new MTP manager who is fabulous. The former one was also very José was great because he was the one we actually introduced all these changes back in 2004. That's where he started, and so we are moving, and finally we can make a difference as we have done in HIV and AIDS. How many people affected with AIDS have written masters and master's dissertation and PhD thesis? Many HIV and AIDS activists, people affected, had done many research and assessments similar to this. So we have to learn from the HIV and AIDS communities what they have done in the 90s to change the reality. So we have to get much beyond pills. I ask you to start a new era. We have to stop with the eternal blah blah blah, and we have to stop and revise the way we work and the way we deal with things. And we are here. The communities are here, and we are not going to go away. So you have to swallow us. I think it's better if we can work together, and I think we can. I think there are many people who are willing to do work together with the governments, with the academia, with the private sector, and we have to move. We have to move beyond just having pills, because as I said, if pills would be enough, Brazil wouldn't be the 16th worst situation on the planet. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Ezio. I'm proud of you as a TB advocate who raises his voice anytime and anywhere. And I think Ezio has made it very clear that if the NTPs and the other policymakers don't want to go and learn and learn and learn, the TB advocates and people who've suffered from TB are actually willing to take up the challenge and are already taking up the challenge, so that in the future we take up their positions and at the end of the day make better policies for the patients, because we believe that TB is curable, preventable, and treatable, and nobody needs to die from a curable disease just because somebody somewhere is not doing what they're supposed to do. I'll hand over to my chair, Diachi.
Now I'd like to invite all the speakers to come up to the front and sit with us for questions and answers. We really want this to be a conversation because we know many of the people in the room also have quite a bit of experience, and I think that we've heard from very diverse opinions in diverse settings, but a lot of common themes have come up across the presentations, and I hope that you will be able to engage in some conversation and with our colleagues here. So if anyone has questions, please come to the microphone. While we're waiting for people to get up, I would just like to say that one of the things I was struck by in listening to all of these presentations is the very powerful role that advocacy, communication, and social mobilization has played or is playing in the activities that you're undertaking. And I also was struck by the potentials for synergies between especially clients and first-line providers, because a lot of your issues are similar, and I think that there are opportunities to work together, and I wonder if any of the panel could comment on any mechanisms for doing some work with your providers at the community level. Please. What I was asking was, I think that there are a lot of potential synergies between community members, clients, and first-line providers. We were talking a little bit about the concerns of providers at the community level, the difficulties that they face, the challenges that they have in trying to provide adequate services, and the challenges that clients have in accessing adequate services. So it seems that there could be a natural synergy, and I'm wondering if there are any mechanisms that any of you have seen working well at a community level to integrate the client and provider needs and use one voice to articulate that to policymakers.
If I may, start? I think it's very hard, to be honest, to expect that the communities affected will naturally be engaged in the fight against TB. Why is that? Because people mostly affected by TB are living in poverty, and that's only explains the situation. I mean, they suffer from basic needs. They have basic needs which are not fulfilled, so they have other urgent things to do. And these people are normally rejected in the services. I mean, people don't pay attention much on poor people. That's the truth. I mean, and that's very universal. I mean, the less money you have, and the worse dressed that you get to a place, the worse treated you are, and that's the reality. And throughout the planet, that's a very human thing, a perverse human thing to do. And how do we fight this? We fight this getting organized, and for that we have to do awareness raising first. We have to make people understand what is the problem, what is the picture, because people don't get the picture. People don't have this picture. I must tell you, I must confess to you, I didn't until 2002. And I'm a long-term, I'm a very active AIDS activist since the 80s, late 80s. I mean, back in 2002, one night, the national, the state TV program in Rio de Janeiro, during a carnival night, believe you or not, it was Saturday night, I mean, in a street party, she grabbed my arm and said, Ezio, we need to do social mobilization. Rhea looked at her face and said, what? And I said, well, yeah, we have to do social mobilization on TV, and I need your help. And I said, so how do we do that? How we get started? And I said, I don't know. I need your help to do that. So that's when we got started, because, I mean, the government was seeing that without a proper demands and proper requirements from the communities, from the organized civil society, and from people affected, nothing would change. So that's why I insist that in order to have an organized community able to do work around TB and the co-infection, it has to be invested. We have to engage people. I mean, we have to give the tools. We have to work together. We have to build this. We should not expect that the TB movement will be like the AIDS movement back in the 80s. I am one of the few reminiscents of the 80s. I mean, I'm the typical profile from the Western people affected by AIDS in the 80s. I mean, gay, white, middle class person. So with a university degree, I am one of the few remainers of that time. I mean, I'm a long time survivor. But AIDS had that response because it was affecting people who were very notorious. And who cares about people who don't have money? Who cares? You know, that's the point. Let's be honest. And so in order to be listened, we have to get organized. And these people cannot get organized by themselves. They need help. We the communities, we have to do this work. And the governments have to understand that it's not against them. The governments have to understand that communities actually can help strengthening the health systems. We can do that. We have done that with AIDS. I mean, we have done that with AIDS, so we don't need to go so far. So, I mean, the communities can be a fabulous, fabulous partner. And we can be a very sharp critic. That's our duty, to be very sharp critics. But we are the best and the most loyal partners people can have. So, but we have to build this. We have to invest in that, because that will not happen by itself, as it had in AIDS.
Anyone else?
When I got to the airport, as I was arriving here, somebody asked me, are you attending the Union Conference on Lung Disease? I said yes, and she asked me, do you smoke? You know, the judgment started there. She wanted to judge me from whether I smoke or not. And I met a lady, a German lady in the streets of Cape Town, who asked me, are you here for this conference? I said yes, and she asked me, the air around Cape Town is very dirty. Are you going to do something about it? Now, to come to making integration work, I think if doctors, nurses, and clinicians would get off their high horses and come down just to live with people, perhaps that would make a difference. I'm talking about professionals coming out to be them, to be real people. I mean, you are not any different from us. We are also professionals in our own right. But we have come out and we are working with the downtrodden, the very low, the lowest of people. I mean, why don't you have an accountant, a banker, a doctor in a support group sitting down around a meal of rice and talking about how we can come out of this quagmire together? We have sent out community volunteers to work hand in hand with those at the NTP, and it seemed to be working very well. But yet when we were presenting, you had there are still territorial tendencies of people saying, this is my docket, this belongs there. Why do we want to keep up these imaginary walls between us? Can't we just collapse them and work together for the good of humanity? Because if we don't do so, TB is only a cough away. And TB is not confined to the poor alone. I know very rich people who have TB. And so I think integration is going to work for us if we accept to calm down our high horses and just start being people. Because first of all, we are people. Then secondly, then we can become different professionals. So if we looked at ourselves as people first, perhaps we'll start to move towards fighting TB and HIV effectively.
Question over here?
Yes, she was first.
Okay.
So I have some comments and some questions. First of all, when you speak about integration of TB and HIV services, I think that there are a couple of countries where this is a success, and these are the countries where decentralization for HIV/AIDS services have started from scratch. I am mentioning Benin as one of the examples because you have decentralized locations everywhere in the country where they train the basic physicians to HIV/AIDS services, and then if they train the same ones to cope with TB patients, that was pretty easy. And when I go back to what you said in South Africa and I look at the number of facilities where you treat TB patients and you compare it to the number of facilities where you address HIV/AIDS patients, and then when you look at the number of the TB-affected patients and HIV/AIDS-affected patients, you see that it's extremely difficult. And if you would decide that you train everybody in all these joint facilities to address the two diseases, don't you think, and this is a question, of course, that it wouldn't be an idea? That's the second thing I would like to say, and this is a question to the Ukrainian colleague, is he said, and this is a known fact everywhere, at least in the countries we are talking about, that the financial conditions of the medical doctors are extremely poor. And this is one of the reasons, and I am not, everyone knows that, of the brain drain out of a lot of countries in Africa. In Lesotho, where I was recently, there are 17 Basotho medical doctors. The other 70 for 2 million of people don't speak the language and have been imported from other African countries. And you have a whole number of 100 nurses. So I would like to ask to the Ukrainian colleague, if the grant of the Global Fund did provide some additional money for the people who are trying to incorporate HIV/AIDS and TB care for the patients. And I would also like to hear from the audience how you think that you can address this common care for TB and HIV/AIDS patients if you don't either raise the money of the health workers through grants from the Global Fund, because you cannot expect that poor governments are going to handle the situation, or delegate this to members of the communities, which is what happens in a branch of African countries. And the third and last thing I would like to ask is, this is today the first time that I have heard from our Kenyan friend that malnutrition should be addressed. The first time in the entire conference. I am from WFP, and we are supporting some TB programs as well as some HIV/AIDS programs. I have asked to some of the organizers why was it that malnutrition was not on board at all, nowhere, no poster session, nothing. Is it not an issue? Now, the answer I got was that for the seventh round of the Global Fund,
Can we get people to address the questions that you asked, because there
others. Let me just finish. For the seventh round of the Global Fund, a branch of WHO advisors in various countries received a message by mail from WHO saying to them, don't ask for nutritional support in the grounds for the seventh proposal, because it's not proven that this can help the TB care. So I would like this to be answered.
Marrero, do you want to start?
Thank you for the question. When it comes to the training of everybody in the two diseases, that is the position that we have started to take. Actually, as part of that TB-HIV collaboration project, there is a training component of that project. Currently, we have got about 10,000 professional nurses on our database, and we have trained almost 5,000 of those in TB-HIV collaborative activities. And that is ongoing, because we feel that the most important aspect of collaboration is to have well-capacitated healthcare providers who will be able to manage the same diseases in one setting. The problem that we are having currently in terms of effective integration and referral system is the fact that we still have parallel programs, especially at the national level. And these programs go down to the district and provinces with conflicting demands, separate demands, separate monitoring and evaluation system. As a result, the TB nurse will focus more on TB treatment outcomes than on HIV aspect, and vice versa. But we are working towards that, that the emphasis on training. We know now that most of our health care providers have been trained effectively on clinical integration of TB and HIV. They understand the close relationship as well as the symptoms, including the overlapping symptoms and overlapping side effects of the diseases. But the challenge is to look at the structural integration at the facility level. That's why we're talking about the different forms of integration, that the ideal situation is that one of the complete integration where you've got a one-stop.
Thank you. Volodya. Can't hear. Can't hear. Mike. Try the next.
Thank you for a very good question, and it was connected to the previous question to me.
У нас в Украине есть опыт влияния сообщества на работу врачей, и этот опыт он базировался на работе мультидисциплинарных команд по лечению ВИЧ-позитивных людей. Это в области ВИЧ-СПИДа.
We already have good experience, positive experience in Ukraine, how communities can influence the physicians' attitude and the key, quality of their care. And it was based on the creation of multidisciplinary teams to care in age of HIV-positive people.
И, конечно, в проекте шестого раунда у нас предусмотрены заработные платы тем врачам, дополнение к их официальным заработным платам, которые будут работать в проектах по оказанию услуг ВИЧ-инфицированным и больным туберкулезом.
And in the Global Fund project team, round six, project, we included the compensation, additional compensation to those healthcare providers who would be involved in the specific pilots in providing the services. It would be additional, in addition to the regular work.
Конечно, этих денег всегда недостаточно, этих средств, потому что программы планируются 2-3 года назад, перед тем, как они начинают осуществляться, а уровень инфляции постоянно растет.
And of course, it's always, you know, lack of this funding and this money because programs are planned well in advance, like 2-3 years prior, and inflation is really fast and quick, and it's eating most of the resources are located.
Но тем не менее, в Украине у нас сложилась уникальная возможность, чтобы врачи прислушивались мнению комьюнити, так как комьюнити в данном случае организация комьюнити есть та организация, которая финансирует всю эту деятельность в рамках программы глобального фонда.
But in Ukraine right now, just because the community represented the community network of the special community is the recipient, it's a unique situation when community would really influence the services and quality of services provided, because community would fund these projects. That's why it's probably the first example in the region.
Но проблема на самом деле намного глубже, потому что когда мы говорим о общей системе здравоохранения, куда приходят люди по другим вопросам, связанным там, с экстренной медицинской помощью, то здесь влиять на ситуацию очень тяжело, и стигма, и дискриминация, и уровень отказа от предоставления медицинской помощи именно в общей системе здравоохранения очень велик.
But the problem itself is much deeper, because when we are speaking about this particular HIV and TB services, we would be able to influence. But when we are speaking about the general healthcare services, when people with HIV or TB status are coming to the services or infected, and for some other needs like emergency care or other surgery, the level of being refused or the possibility to be refused is very high, unfortunately, and because of stigma, and also because there are no tool to influence the situation, to influence all care providers, not only particularly those who provide the HIV and TB services.
Поэтому очень важным вопросом остается вопрос реформы, комплексной реформы здравоохранения. До тех пор, пока у нас будут финансироваться койко-места в стране и структуры, а не конкретный пациент, до тех пор будут у нас трудности.
So that's why the problem is that, it's a pressing need of the healthcare system reform, and until the financing will go to support some vertical programs, not the patient care, that's just client or patient. So until this moment, it would be many problems.
Thank you. I think we haven't forgotten the issue of malnutrition, but what I'd like to do, because there are many people standing at the microphones, is just get your questions so that we can answer them in turn. So please, we'll take all five questions for people who are standing and respond to those.
Thank you. My issue is with the presentations that have come up. We seem to be just taking diseases and forgetting the human being in it. If we put the human rights issue in the healthcare system, I think that would make things much better, because I'm imagining as a woman living with HIV, being in all those systems that have been talked about, I seem to be a ball bumping around, being, kicked here and there. But I think if I'm taken as a human being with all the issues that surround me, then that would be very helpful. And please, can you also explain what ACSM means? It's my first time in a conference like this.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think my question is directed to Izio and to Shanto. We heard yesterday in a presentation that in different countries, between 30 and 85% of TB patients are tested for HIV. The figure quoted for South Africa, where I come from, was 32%. This is despite near universal availability of rapid HIV tests and counseling services. So it seems that there's also a great reluctance on the part of TB patients to be tested for HIV. I would just like to ask the speakers if they've got any idea what are the main factors, what can be done to get more TB patients to consent to HIV testing.
Thank you. Over here.
Thank you very much for wonderful presentations, particularly congratulating my colleague who is not a physician, the presentation from Brazil. We're proud to have you on the side of health. My suggestion is that I think the TB, HIV, particularly TB network, needs to completely have a paradigm shift in the sense of our look of TB, the global problem, MDR, XDR, co-infection with HIV, as strictly a health issue, is we're strictly missing the point. And the way I look at it, it's like the better strategy would be to look at it as a communication problem. Because what has cut across everything is that information, and that cuts across everywhere. We can keep on singing about XDR, MDR. If the people that are most at risk don't know, if communities don't know, and we keep on looking for better diagnostics and whatever, we're still missing the point. And I think the strategy needs to address it as a communication issue and handle it as such. And that's my suggestion, rather than looking at it as strictly a health issue. Because once it's a communication issue, many other people can nicely link to it and contribute in very meaningful ways to change the program. The food issue, the policy issue, the health issue, and then the access issue would all naturally contribute. And it's like even the funding can come from different ways so that everybody will be contributing his own quota to making things work so that the fight becomes truly a global fight. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Kistoudis.
Thank you. It was a really pleasure to attend this session, and I'd like to thank co-chairs and all presenters for wonderful presentations. I would like to touch issue of stigma and discrimination. The presentation of Mr. Zhovtyak showed a great stigma for AIDS, but research done in Ukraine by WHO and PATH show that stigma for tuberculosis is much higher than for AIDS. On the other hand, we have a lot of NGOs working in AIDS, but no any NGO working in tuberculosis. So my question would be, what are you going to do, or what you already done, to encourage people living with HIV AIDS to organize NGOs to fight tuberculosis? Thank you.
Thanks. Next, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My question is directed to the health representative of South Africa. You're talking about the figures of 10,000 healthcare workers and 5,000 that has been trained. Is that a plan that you got in place, or is that something happening in reality? And if it is so, how do you make sure that you covering all the areas of South Africa or Western Cape? I don't know what is your focus area. And again, looking at the sites that are being accredited in South Africa, you said you've got about 359 sites accredited for ARVs. Going to those sites, yes, they are accredited, but going to those sites to access the treatment, there's no such a thing. There are no ARVs. What is really happening? How do you monitor the accreditation process? For an example, Caledon Hospital here in Western Cape has been accredited since 2005, but even today there are no ARVs, and there's nothing, there's no response that we're getting positively from the Department of Health. And again, the suggestion that I will come up with is more commonly to the gentleman that has just finished his statement on the other side. My suggestion is around treatment literacy. We need to literate, the Department of Health need to initiate a treatment literacy programs in a local level and recognize a treatment literacy practitioners to take the lead as much as the other NGOs are doing so, you know, to overcome the situation of TB and HIV, you know. And yeah, lastly, my concern is a one-stop clinic. I just want to get a point of clarity. Is that still in documentation? I mean, in documents? Or, I mean, when I'm saying in document, is that still in plan that you are intending to have a one-stop clinic, or is it happening in reality currently? Because, for an example, we've got the area in Hermanus Hospital where you go, you had to go for TB services on a other clinic, whereas in Hermanus Hospital itself, you can only get access to antiretrovirals. There's no such, there's no TB care in that particular area. Thank you.
Thank you. And then one last question. We will try to get to the answers very quickly.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Director of Pediatric HIV and Tuberculosis Program in Partners Health Rwanda. And I do agree with everyone that we need to work in synergy to improve the treatment. And I have I have a concern, and I'm addressing directly to the with the health organization representative as a policymaker and a physician, but to Chantal from Cambodia, who has experience working with community health workers, and Azzy from Brazil, community member activists. My question is that every time we're talking about tuberculosis or HIV AIDS, every time we realize that we're talking for adult, and most of decisions are made for adult, and we see that at all levels the children are affected and they are ignored, and we're going to see if tuberculosis occurs in the family, most of the time it is only the parent who goes at first to the clinic, and sometimes they don't take the, they don't bring the children at the clinics. And yeah, I do acknowledge that there are a lot of barriers, and in most of time it is women who are leading the families, and they are poor, sometimes they have a lot of children, then they prefer to go to the clinic themselves, and then they ignore the children, and most of the children are dying at home. And when you're looking also at the molecular we have, so it is really difficult to treat children co-infected, because most of the time we don't have appropriate treatment. I'd like to ask you the three levels, how can we improve the treatment towards the children. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll start with an easy answer. ACSM is advocacy, communication, and social mobilization. And I think, does anyone want to comment on the human rights-based approach to care? Thank you.
I think the human rights approach cannot be separated by of the activism or the issues that we at least from our perspective the communities have to deal. We basically defend rights. We advocate for civil and human rights basically, because the human rights perspective, as we have seen in HIV and AIDS, has led us to have actually treatment. Because remember the 80s, when there was no treatment existing, there was no medication or no treatment for AIDS, not even for the major opportunistic infections. And we have created this based on the basic human rights approach. That's how we started our legal procedures in Brazil. Back in 1990, we have to sue the government to have people with AIDS accepted in hospitals, because people with AIDS would die at home because hospitals wouldn't take people with AIDS. That's not very far ago. People tend to look at Brazil as a paradise for AIDS treatment. It has always been wonderful and fabulous. It's not like that. And it, not long ago, I mean, I remember that in 1992, there was discussion in the Congress to put people with AIDS in a farm in Midwest, the country, to isolate people to try to avoid the spreading of the disease. I mean, things like that, taking the Cuban model or something like that, or what has been used before. I mean, this. We have to take the human rights approach in TB as well as we had used it in HIV and AIDS. But I don't see a difference. I would go quickly through the aspect of information. I think definitely the colleague who raised the issue. I mean, information is cross-cutting all the aspects, because information we can understand that in various ways. I mean, in terms of how we address that to the large population, how we address the people affected, how we empower the people affected, and how we create data. That's all information. We have to. That's education, people. I mean, education actually does health. Makes health goes better. I mean, that's education. We have to deal with that. I mean, it's not a medical approach by itself won't solve the problem. Otherwise, we, as I said already. And regarding, I'll just touch the points and then I'll be finished. Okay, Darcy. In terms of how to engage testing for HIV people in a high prevalence co-infection rates here in South Africa, and where access is not guaranteed to everybody. I mean, it is tough. I have been following the work of my activist colleagues from Treatment Action Campaign here in South Africa and other activists here. And I'm sorry to say, but it's very confusing because the messages I hear from the Minister of Health in South Africa there is a contrast, because yesterday the Minister of Health said that there would the integration of the services is not a big deal, and actually we cannot gain much from that. I mean, she said in the press conference, and we saw the TB manager saying that we should integrate, we need to integrate, we have to have services and comprehensive delivery. So I mean there is something wrong. I mean, we have to listen to our managers. I mean, the governments have to listen to their managers. Otherwise, I mean, how would this be tackled? I mean, and in terms of testing, I mean, we have to use tools which are already existing. I mean, in Brazil, we are creating very rapid HIV tests. We can other countries have already developed rapid tests. I mean, we are improving in these technologies. We have to go further in testing, but we cannot sit and wait for new tools to arrive. We have to use well the tools that we have at the moment. And again, as I said, if we use the tools that we actually have, we will reduce enormously the size of the problem. And treatment literacy, again, it's information. We need it in all aspects.
Thank you. Maybe we can go through the specific questions for Marrero around monitoring and evaluation. And then Chantal can address the pediatric TB-HIV question. And Volodya can talk about groups after that.
Thank you. I'll start with a question of reluctance for TB patients to be tested for HIV. From our program, one of our indicators for the level of expansion is to check on the number of TB patients that are accessing counseling and testing. And the figures that we have shows the growth, the trend is growing for counseling and testing of TB patients. We have got around, even though I don't have exact figures with me, I know that it's more than 70% of TB patients that are being counseled. and tested. And about 90% of those that are HIV positive are given cotrimoxazole prophylaxis. But having said that, we are also involved in the operational research where funds from the Global Fund has been given to a Gauteng province and one NGO to look at voluntary counseling and testing quality and all. And also that will also incorporate the access to VCT for TB patients.
And then can you address the question of the monitoring and evaluation of facilities that are accredited for ARVs?
Yes, yeah. Yes. The second one is that one of the monitoring and evaluation of accredited services. The National Department is responsible for giving accreditation to the facilities, saying that this facility can provide antiretroviral services. What after that, it is the responsibility of the province to make sure that that facility is well and functioning. Currently, we are not aware of any facility that has been without ARVs, because one of the monitoring tools is one of the criteria for accreditation is to make sure that there is a pharmacy inside and that the site is going to ensure continual supplies of medication. So one of the monitoring is also to look at whether there has been any stock out at the facilities, and at the moment that has not come to our attention at national level.
Thank you.
And then the third one is that one of one-stop clinic. The one-stop clinic is already there because this is an option that we give to districts as we do the training, that there are three models that they can utilize depending on the setup on that particular district. In smaller clinics, it's easier to do the one-stop service because everything is done there. In very busy community health centers, we find that we still have the TB sections and the HIV section, and yet for the integrated approach, there's need for continuous communication and discussion and multidisciplinary approach to the patient care.
Thank you.
The last one is the treatment literacy. What role is it playing in TB and HIV? Currently, the treatment literacy program is focused on HIV and AIDS, especially as part of a drug preparation effort. But the treatment literacy is also happening on the TB side before the patient goes onto the TB treatment, especially through the TB focal points, the focal person that I've alluded to in the presentation. So the treatment literacy is playing an important role in both TB treatment as well as HIV and AIDS treatment.
Okay, then I would ask Chantal to quickly answer the pediatric TB-HIV question and Volodya to follow up with a networking question. And then I will turn it back to my co-chair to wrap this session up.
Yeah, in Cambodia, we have the HIV-AIDS, we say OIAT services. And actually, in OIAT service is mainly on the Ripple Hospital. And up till now, there are 49 OIAT services for adults. And we have also more than Ripple Hospital that did not have the services, OIAT services. And among the 49 OIAT services, only 22 services that provide OIAT services for the children. So it in Cambodia is automatically when the patient found HIV positive, they have to refer to for TB screening at the TB ward. And we have some problem that the services is not, we say, the especially the the children is not access to the services because we have only 22 services in the referral hospital. But there are a lot of children cannot access the services because it live far away from the referral hospital. And for, as I already mentioned, that the diagnosis of children is also the issue that for TB, we have capacity of the staff that making diagnosis for the children. And this is also the still issue in Cambodia. However, a national program, TB program, developed a protocol guideline related to the TB diagnosis for children. And the linkage between HIV TB is not the real issue, but the issue is the services is not available for the children.
Ответить на специфические вопросы, связанные с развитием туберкулезных организаций в Украине.
I'll answer the question regarding the development of NGOs for TB services in Ukraine.
Ну, я, во-первых, хочу сказать, что по опыту работы в своей организации, создания сети людей, живущих с ВИЧ, хочу сказать, что такая работа, она не может быть сделана быстро, и, наверное, в Украине придется ждать лет 5, а то и 10, пока возникнет и будет такая организация мощной.
Based on the experience of the, you know, of and the development of network of people living with HIV/AIDS, it is not a very quick process to create a powerful big network, and it would take time, like from 5 to 10 years, 10 years in Ukraine, as is a big, large network of groups addressing TB.
Со своей стороны, мы уже сегодня поддерживаем, например, активности таких организаций, как коалиция ветсервисных организаций, которая буквально послезавтра проводит украинскую конференцию по туберкулезу среди неправительственных организаций. Пытаемся поддерживать и помогать, скажем, не совсем организации туберкулезных больных, а, скажем, больше организации, созданные профессионалами, это «Украинцы против туберкулеза», чтобы сфокусировать их работу больше на потребности больных. В свою очередь, мы сами берем на себя ответственность и будем поддерживать работу по работе ВИЧ и туберкулезу как коинфекции, с вопросом, связанных с коинфекцией.
We are taking the responsibility to provide services and care and address the needs of the people with co-infection, with TB-HIV co-infection, but we also would help use our just experience and knowledges to support the development of a specific TB organizations like currently Ukrainians Against TB to help them focus specifically on the patient's needs. And also we are supporting the work of a coalition of HIV service organizations that, and it's exactly like the day after tomorrow, they organize the second all-Ukrainian conference to address TB issues. And we support some of their activities also.
И мы с удовольствием будем и дальше продолжать делиться тем опытом, и той и опытом, которого есть в нашей организации для организаций, работающих в сфере туберкулеза. Но я хочу сказать, что у нас нет в Украине этих 5 и 10 лет, чтобы ждать, пока будет мощная организация больных туберкулезом. И сегодня такие вопросы, связанные с качеством туберкулезных препаратов, которые применяются в нашей стране, с ценой этих препаратов в рамках государственных закупок мы уже поднимаем и будем их поднимать более остро в ближайшее время.
And so what I want also to say that the main point is that we don't have this 5 or 10 years to wait until the very powerful, strong group of network of NGOs dealing with TB would be created in Ukraine. So the most painful, the most acute issues related to the quality of TB drugs related to the procurement or centralized governmental procurement prices for this procurement we address within our advocacy campaign. Right now, already, we started to do this. And also, we are very open and would provide any support to all new organizations which would be created and would start to deal with the TB.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I want to say thank you to all of our panelists for their talks and their very thoughtful answers to all the questions. And I would like to thank the audience as well for your patience. And now I'd like to turn it back over to Lucy to close our session.
Thank you very much, Diachi. Some of the things that have really come out from this interesting session of what hurts and what helps are the issue around vertical programs which exist, but we have actually seen from the different countries that it is possible to be able to integrate TB and HIV and collaborate the services for the sake of this patient who is actually one patient but with two diseases. And while doing that, there's the need for a multidisciplinary team to work on TB or HIV. It's very critical, as Izia said, that we need to engage the civil society organizations to raise their voices in terms of advocacy, treatment, literacy, and also implementation. And while we do this, not forgetting that there's the need for standardized reporting systems, both for TB and TB-HIV. The issue around diagnostics has also come up very strongly, and drugs, so that we are going beyond the higher pill burdens to lower pill burdens as better drugs get developed to address the two diseases. Above all, and I think one message that we need to take home is the issue about the need to focus programs to meet the needs of the clients and not the healthcare systems. And as we do that, we should remember that we have a lot concentrated on TB-HIV integration among adults and actually almost forgotten the children, so there's the need to really scale up TB-HIV implementation and collaboration for pediatrics. And I'll just use a statement that Izio said, and to remind you all that activists and advocates are here to stay, considering that we now have the fifth component of the Stop TB strategy that says that there is greater need to engage communities and TB patients in the fight against TB so that we can successfully make all this a success. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank you all for making this session a great success. Thanks to my co-chair, Diachi, also for being here, and all the panelists. And we'd like to take this opportunity to close the session and apologize that we have actually gone overboard by about 20 minutes. But we want to wish you a pleasant day and successful remaining days for the conference. And wherever you go, remember, TB-HIV integration should take us to greater heights. Thank you all for coming.
Thanks.
Thank you. Oh, yes, it was not.